It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan. Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66, WFAN and WFAN-FM, New York.
Well, good morning and welcome to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori on this Sunday morning, April 25th. How are we doing this morning? Talking Golf with Ann Liguori is brought to you by Travelers, proud sponsor of the Travelers Championship, June 24th through the 27th. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella. Well, glad you can join me on this rainy Sunday. And if you miss any part of this show, you can catch it on odyssey.com. I'll pull out a couple hours when they post the podcast version. And if you missed my exclusive interview with Gary Player last Sunday, and I'll say it again, I admire Gary for being so forthright and open, talking about his son and what went down during that honorary tea ceremony at the Masters. If you missed that interview or any shows, you can catch it on odyssey.com. And I put up all my shows in the radio archive section on my website at annliguori.com. You know, quotes from that Gary Player interview got picked up in numerous publications last week. And I just thought he was so straightforward. He could have avoided answering my questions, but instead he was very honest, which is most admirable. And, you know, he made a lot of news. And if you want to just read the quotes, you can always Google Gary Player and WFAN, and the articles will come right up. All right, well, this morning we are going to visit with Stuart Sink. At the age of 47, has defied the odds, and he's really enjoying a spectacular season. He won last weekend at the RBC Heritage on Hilton Head Island. Last September, he won at the Safeway Open. And all this after an 11-year winless drought that dates back to his victory at the 2009 Open Championship. You remember that Open Championship. Stuart Sink stopped Tom Watson's incredible bid to win a sixth Open Championship. Sink won in a four-hole playoff at Turnberry. And then he went winless for 11 years until last September. And then again last weekend with his son, Reagan, on his bag. He led wire to wire to win his eighth title of his career. And his ranking shot up from 115 in the world to 44 in the world. And his win last weekend was truly a family affair. As I mentioned, his son was caddying for him. His wife, Lisa, who's in remission from breast cancer, she was there. His other son, Connor, flew in from Wyoming. You could really feel the joy. It was quite heartwarming. And it's just great to see a 47-year-old, a veteran of the tour, get back in the winner's circle. I mean, how is this possible when you're competing against guys half your age? Well, we'll find out what Stuart Sink does physically and mentally to be the best he can be. We'll also find out how he feels about perhaps making the Ryder Cup team. You know, the Ryder Cup is in September at Whistling Straits, postponed from last year because of the pandemic. And this year, the top six players automatically qualify for the Ryder Cup team. And then U.S. team captain Steve Stricker, he gets six captain's picks. And I taped this interview with Stuart Sink last night. And let's just say that Stuart shed some interesting light on his Ryder Cup hopes and said he has already heard from Steve Stricker. How about that? He moved up to 24 in the standings after his win last weekend. And, you know, he's a lot of experience on Ryder Cup teams. He's been on five Ryder Cups. So, yeah, there has been 11 years since his last Ryder Cup appearance back in 2010, but it's been done before. Mark Calcavecchia, he played on the 91 Ryder Cup team, and then 11 years later, he played on the 2002 Ryder Cup team. Wouldn't it be great? I mean, you want somebody with a lot of experience. You want somebody who's obviously peaking going into September. So certainly, Stuart Sink has a shot with two wins this season and more time to do well. So that interview is coming up at about 7:30 this morning. And before I chat with Stuart Sink, we're going to be enlightened on a subject that probably many of us don't think too much about. I know I didn't. Have you ever wondered if the merchandise you spend a lot of your money on, whether it's golf equipment, shoes, apparel, is actually the authentic product that you think you're purchasing? There's a counterfeit culture out there with merchandise. And it's a subject that we're going to discuss this morning. We're going to learn a little more about it. Wayne Buchan, the Vice President of Strategic Sales for a company called Applied DNA Sciences, he'll join us in a few minutes to explain how PCR-based DNA manufacturing can ensure a brand's authenticity. I met Wayne playing golf, and as you know, golf brings all kinds of people together from all walks of life. And he started to tell me about what he does, and he shed a lot of light on this problem that exists, the counterfeit issue, as it relates to various products we purchase, we just assume are the real deal. And there is a way through the supply chain that products can be tested for consumer protection. So we'll get to that in a second. The Zurich Classic of New Orleans, the only two-man event on the PGA Tour, has Louis Oosthuizen and Charles Schwartzel, buddies since their early golf tournament playing days in South Africa, sitting on top of the leaderboard at 19 under after shooting a 9-under 63. And today's final round will feature alternate format play, which is very, very tough. It's difficult to get in a rhythm with your partner. You and your partner play one ball and you alternate who hits it. So that should be interesting. And congratulations to Brooke Henderson, who edged Jessica Korda by one shot at the LPGA event at the Wilshire Country Club in Los Angeles. Okay, we're going to take a quick break and come back and talk to Wayne Buchan of Applied DNA Sciences. But first, let me tell you that at Travelers, we never lose sight of our promise to take care of our customers and communities. That's why we're so excited to welcome another field of world-class golfers to this year's Travelers Championship, June 24th through the 27th. Since 2007, the tournament has raised over $20 million for charities across the region. Thanks to the support of the PGA Tour's best players, the thousands of volunteers, and all our loyal fans. For over 160 years, Travelers has been helping protect the people we serve. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Well, welcome back to Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori. Stuart Sink coming up at about 7:30. And first, I want to talk about a subject that I don't really know too much about. And I've always been interested in golf apparel, all sportswear, really. But what I really think about is the possibility that, like, the baseball jersey you might have just purchased, or the golf shirt, or those new golf shoes can be counterfeit and not authentic. What you may purchase may not be what the company intended it to be in terms of the quality of the fabric and the various properties of each piece. And Wayne Buchan is the Vice President of Strategic Sales for a company called Applied DNA Sciences. He's worked with brands such as Nautica, Under Armour, Lacoste in operations, product development. And Wayne joins us this morning. Welcome to Talking Golf, Wayne.
Hey, Ann. Thanks for having me. How are you?
I'm good. Well, this is a very specialized field, yet one that ultimately impacts all of us. You know, the consumers of sportswear, shoes, sports equipment. Can you give us some examples of a product gone astray, perhaps? You know, we're paying a premium price for a product that may not be authentic or doesn't quite meet the brand's performance criteria.
Sure. You know, the counterfeit or the knockoff culture of products is nothing new. It's been around for years and years, and it's only gotten better. You know, take the New York metropolitan region. How many of us have been walking around the streets pre-COVID? We've been approached by someone on the street showing us bags, showing us watches, showing us different products. And then we walk down to the Lower East Side and you see an assortment of different products as well. Why wouldn't I think this penetrates the golf market? It runs the gamut of all our favorite sportswear brands, footwear, hats, gloves, etc.
All right, so tell us about your background in global operations and how you got into this field.
Sure. So I started with a family business and started working in the parochial school uniforms, working down in North Carolina, working all around. And then I got into working with Liz Claiborne. And I started working with Liz Claiborne down in the South. And I had the opportunity to join some of some great, great brands that were going on, working in recycled polyester, working in different footwear, working in different areas, and getting the opportunity to build product with some of the best in the business.
Great. Okay. So you've like worked for so many different companies. And so take us through this process. How is it possible to ensure that, you know, the shoes that I'm buying at my favorite sporting goods store or whatever I'm buying is really the real deal?
Yeah. So let's look at a couple different things. Let's take you through a couple things. First and foremost, we work with a company called American and Eford in Mount Holly, North Carolina, where we use our DNA as well as a beacon technology where we can put in a specific decryptant, which will give the customer the ability to check products quickly on site to see if the thread has been used according to spec. Keep in mind, if the incorrect thread or materials are used, then the chance of failure in the product increases, and then the risk to the customer and the brand is suspect. Secondly, we work with the largest tanneries in Asia. We have tagged both PU and suede, which is used in most of our golf shoes today, as well as all of our footwear and sneakers. We can ensure that the correct leathers used, the color, the quality is being done for production, and all of the specifications are done not only for our shoes, but our bags. We can then test on site at each touch point of the production process. We also tag coatings, which, for instance, I'm a FootJoy golf shoe fan. Mm-hmm. They use a waterproofing process to make their dry joys. What would happen if a supplier producing the shoe decided to use a lower quality spray agent for waterproofing, and then the shoe didn't keep our feet dry? We, of course, being consumers, would be pretty ticked, and we'd probably send a note back to FootJoy and let them know that the shoes don't meet our expectations. Thus, there are many areas in supply chain where diversion, meaning using inferior products, can be introduced purposely or inadvertently, where it will impact the final products, which we are all paying for.
It's an amazing process. Is it relatively new?
No, actually, Applied DNA Sciences is a company located in Stony Brook, Long Island, led by James Hayward, who is actually a microbiologist. We have an amazing world-class team there where we actually produce our synthetic DNA there. In addition to tagging textiles, though, or anything related to the golf apparel footwear space, we're also involved in cannabis, pharmaceuticals, nutraceuticals, COVID-19 testing, LinearX, and we've also built a clinical lab out there on our campus and to build a collaboration with vaccines.
So you can do this, obviously, this process with a lot of different products. But so getting back to, you know, the golf apparel and golf shoes, is it a huge problem, this counterfeit market?
Well, you know, I don't have the exact statistics, but during my years in UA and my years in Lacoste, we saw very detailed and difficult to detect counterfeits. Thus, anywhere there's a market that's considered premium, upscale, high technology, or performance, the opportunity for counterfeiting goes up.
Could I tell by the naked eye if I'm not purchasing an authentic shirt or pair of shoes?
You know, when you go to the store, I don't believe that you're going to be able to. Or if you go to a flea market, or you're going to go somewhere else. The only way is when you go to a flea market or an area of diversion, the prices are probably, you know, so much lower than the expectations, but, you know, they're always going to sell to you. But I can tell by the hand of the fabrics. I can look at a garment and look at the product or shoes and understand the sewing thread application. Or sometimes the trims may look authentic, but they're not. You can see that they're going to tarnish. You can see that the finishes haven't been used correctly. Otherwise, it's very difficult for a consumer to know this by looking at a product.
You have to really know what to look for, right?
Absolutely. No doubt about it.
So how's your golf game, Wayne?
Well, man, it's pretty competitive, but it's definitely not where I like it. From a consistency standpoint, okay. But I enjoy getting out here at the club at Old Cypress down in Naples, Florida, where I reside, and making sure that I'm improving each and every day.
And you played a little golf in the New York metropolitan area too, right?
Oh, absolutely. No question about it. Played over at Ridgewood Country Club, Arcola in New Jersey. You know, enjoy getting out on the course as much as we can.
Well, I appreciate you coming on and kind of shedding some light on this subject, because it's something that I don't think about that much, but now I'm going to start thinking about it for sure.
Absolutely. Listen, it's real. And, you know, I don't think it's going to go away. We have to continue to do our diligence, and our company continues to evolve, and we're out there to protect the brands and the consumer.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much for joining us, Wayne.
Great, Ann. Have a great day.
Have a great morning, and hit them straight. Hopefully the weather down in Florida is a little better than in New York today. Wayne Buchan, thanks so much. All right, we're going to take a quick break and come back and visit with the ever-joyful, amazing Stuart Sink. We'll do that in a few minutes, but first let me tell you that at Travelers, we never lose sight of our promise to take care of our customers and communities. That's why we're so excited to welcome another field of world-class golfers to this year's Travelers Championship, June 24th through the 27th. Since 2007, the tournament has raised over $20 million for charities across the region, thanks to the support of the PGA Tour's best players, the thousands of volunteers, and all our loyal fans. For over 160 years, Travelers has been helping protect the people we serve. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Welcome back to Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori, and it is my pleasure to say hello to Stuart Sink. Stuart, welcome to Talkin' Golf.
Well, thank you, Ann. Nice to be on.
Eight-time PGA Tour winner and your most recent victory coming last weekend at the RBC Heritage. Wow, congratulations.
Thank you. It was great.
I bet. I mean, you wowed everyone last weekend. It was your third RBC Heritage title on Hilton Head, your second title of the season. And you did it with record-breaking scores to boot, the lowest 36-hole score and the lowest 54-hole score in tournament history. So tell me, are you still on cloud nine?
Anytime you get a win on the PGA Tour, you're on cloud nine for a little while anyway, until you tee it up again and you hit that first ball in the water or a three putt or something like that and drags you right back down to earth. But yes, I would have to say it feels like cloud nine still.
It was so heartwarming to watch it last weekend. Your entire family was there to celebrate. I know your son Reagan caddied for you. Your wife Lisa was there. Your other son Connor flew in. What a great family affair.
Yeah, it was like a dream. I mean, I've had my share of wins, and they've all been fun and unique. But, you know, contrasting to one particular win I remember having at Travelers in Hartford where I was not with any family, I won the tournament, did a few interviews, and then called my wife, and she said, oh, yeah, we were watching it on tape delayed, and I think the round was early. So, it finished at like 1 p.m. and the coverage didn't even start until 3. And so they were like, we're on the boat. We celebrated for a second. And then it's like, okay, y'all want some lunch? And it was like, it was the opposite from this, where we got to all celebrate together. And all my kids are adults. Well, both my kids are adults now. And it was a really, really cool moment there for really just the whole weekend. It was awesome.
Well, can you talk about how your son, Reagan, caddy for you? How does that help you? I know he was on your bag last September when you won the Safeway Open, but how different is it when he actually is caddying for you?
Well, I think the best way to describe Reagan's caddying for me and our relationship out there and the way it's impacted me is it's kind of there's a couple of pluses and a couple of minuses. And what I mean by that is the pluses are pretty obvious to see on the coverage and when you hear or you read my interviews or whatever, that, you know, we just have this great relationship and we trust each other. He knows golf really well. He's a scratch player, but the way he thinks about golf and the way he deciphers information about the shot, like the lies and the hole locations and the wind direction and stuff like that, like the real like minutiae of deciding how to hit shots, he's way above a scratch level in that regard. I mean, he's like a tour player. And so we have really good high level discussions about what to expect on the shot. I trust him. He trusts me. So that's really the pluses. The minuses are it's not what it sounds like. I don't mean, it's a negative thing, but what I mean is he takes away a certain thing too, that I've always experienced with caddies. And that is, there's just zero conflict with me and Reagan ever on decision-making. And with my other caddies, all of my caddies in my career, I've always dealt with a little bit of that. And I think that's something that all player and caddy relationships go through. But there's just a little bit of a difference in the philosophy of how are we going to attack the course today? How are we going to attack this hole this week? How are we going to play the 15th hole if it's downwind versus if it's into the wind? And, you know, all the hole locations change every day. Conditions are constantly evolving. We don't ever have any dissent between us, no disagreements. And if we do ever have any kind of a different take on something, then we talk it out and we get on the same page. So the minus would be that there's just it minus any kind of conflict or disagreement out there. And it's just, it's like a really decisive round of golf that I play every day. And I know he's going to be right alongside.
That's awesome. Will he, do you think he'll switch to this as a full-time gig?
Well, no, I know he won't because I'm the boss in that regard. And I don't want my son to end up caddying forever. he started off caddying for me, just as a one-off. He was working for Delta Airlines in the last couple years of his education at Georgia Tech. He did a co-op there where he was working every other semester. And he was really loving it there and thriving. And then Delta offered him a full-time position, but it was at the same time that COVID started. And so they kind of retracted the position just because, like, they didn't, you know, airlines, I mean, I think that doesn't need really further explanation. And right. So his job was being, a little bit of an uncertainty there. And during the meantime, well, he was kind of waiting around for that to start. He said, hey, I'd love to caddy for you again. And I think he's caddied for me three times before Napa last fall. But it was more when he was a teenager and he was still kind of a kid caddy. And it was cool. Like, oh, I'm going to caddy for my dad. But then when he and I played a ton of golf together and he's grown up a lot. And so he said, I'll caddy for you sometime. And I thought, well, you know, I've got this tournament coming up at Safeway in Napa. Why don't you caddy there? Sounds good. That was 10 days before the tournament. And so it was supposed to be just a one-off thing. And then we go out and we win. And so we decided to ride it out one more tournament. And I told him, if we finish top five, you'll keep going. And we finished 12th. Although when I putted in on the 18th hole, I was top five. And then, you know, I ended up finishing 12th. So we had another good week. And then it kept ballooning into, okay, how about one more tournament? And then we thought, well, you know what? I won. I'm in the Masters now, in large part due to my play with you on the bag. So why don't you caddy for me at the Masters? And then we said, well, you know what? Enough of this. I had a fourth place finish at Bermuda, which was a good finish there too. And I said, you know, why don't we just think about just doing this for the whole season? I really enjoy it. And you seem to enjoy it. And we have a great chemistry. And no surprise, Lisa's traveling. So the three of us together, now we don't have our older son, Connor, who works full time. He's not out there all the time, but it just turned into, like, let's make it this season. And you just caddy for me all the way through the FedEx Cup as long as we go. And Reagan's actually engaged to get married in July. So his life is, he's a caddy right now, but pretty soon he's going to become a new husband. And I wouldn't wish that on any wife in the world. After what I've gone through in my life and my wife has persevered through all these years of traveling, I wouldn't want either of my kids to be separated from their spouse to caddy. And that's just, we won't do that. So he's going to caddy for me this season. And however long we go in the playoffs, that'll be the end.
Yeah, I mean, it's just such a great ride. But I understand, I mean, the travel is just insane. And it's a tough life out there. So your wife, Lisa, said she is in awe at how well you are playing at this stage in your career. Even your wife is surprised, right?
Well, she's surprised. Like, I would have to say that Lisa's husband is also surprised a little bit, you know, by the – I mean, yeah, I wouldn't have expected, you know, to have two wins this season already, and maybe more to come, who knows. But it's I'm a little bit surprised at the results, although I've got a lot of good things going for me in golf. And that is, I think, number one, I've got a great support team. I've got Lisa. I mean, I don't think a lot of people name their spouse as a support team member, but I've got my coaches, I've got my trainer. Lisa's excellent, just that knowing me and knowing how I tick, I guess. And also, I just love playing. I love trying to get better at golf and trying to figure out the big puzzle that golf is. And if I didn't have that love and passion for the game, then I would have probably already just hung them up. And I can't imagine doing this without, you know, I'm excited to go and practice golf every day. I'm disappointed when I'm at home and it's raining and I can't get my drills in. I like doing it, and I just am a student of the game and I love it. And, you know, without that, it wouldn't be possible. So, I got a lot of good things going for me, so just keep on having some fun and trying to take the golf courses apart and see where it goes.
I just love your joy and enthusiasm. It is so great to see. And you're going to turn 48 soon. So, and, you know, I was reading where your driving distance average has improved from 295 last year to 306 yards. And after an 11-year drought in the winner's circle since you won that 2009 Open Championship, you've won twice so far this season. So what do you think is the secret?
It's a tangible difference, because I set out to make that difference last year. Didn't have that great a year, and I was disappointed because I played some of the best golf of my life during the pandemic, when we were on hold and I was playing these little events around Atlanta that I organized for a lot of the pros and some of the gals that play around here and, some of the college players, just like to give everybody something to play in. I organized these little 1 or 2 day events the whole time we were at home, and I played amazing, and it was the best golf I've ever played probably in a consistent stretch for those months. And it didn't translate to the PGA Tour though when I started back, and I was disappointed in that. Didn't make the FedEx Cup playoffs last year, so I was disappointed in that. Had some time off to sort of think about it, and I got together with my group and my coaching and figured that I'm just not doing something right. And so we figured that after looking at the stats and looking at some of my launch monitor information with my driving, that I was a little bit inefficient with my driving. And we decided to try to get that a little bit better. And I just got my my launch angle and my speed a little bit better through just a little change in my ball position. And that helped me tweak my equipment to where I could be more efficient too. So I got kind of a 1-2 punch of improvement there. I got my attack angle was better, and it enabled me to take some loft off the driver, which helped reduce the spin. So I got a better launch, higher, faster, with less spin, and that just equals more distance. And so I was able to take advantage of like really becoming a different kind of a driver of the ball. And boy, it just popped right away. I mean, in Napa, that was 10 days after I did this little test and improvement, and it went right to the course and straight to the scorecard immediately. It was just I was a different golfer right away. And I've been mostly that way this whole year and continuing to build on that and gain on it. And yeah, I mean, I've found that driving it longer and a little bit straighter makes golf a little bit easier.
So you it's basically you were tweaking the equipment then.
Well, I tweaked my setup and my a little bit of my mechanics, not a lot, but mm-hmm. my setup and my mechanics got a little bit of an adjustment. And because a club was attacking the ball at a slightly different part in the arc, I was able to change the equipment to match that. And in both cases, it just meant a little bit higher and faster ball
sure.
with a little bit less spin, which just it's like the holy grail of driving. If you can increase your ball speed, your launch angle, and reduce your spin, then you're just going to have more consistent, better, more efficient ball flight. And that works in all conditions, whether wind's blowing down or in or whatever, it doesn't matter. So you can just take that right to the course and it's better immediately.
How about physically, Stuart? Do you go to the gym? Do you weight train? Do you work on, you know, strengthening your core?
Yeah, all those things are super important. I had an injury in 19, a back injury, lower back, and a lot of golfers go through that. And it's the first time I ever had to miss any time with an injury. And I just, during that injury, I started working with a new trainer to kind of help me out of it. Cornell Dreesen is his name, and he works with a lot of golfers. He's a South African guy. And so we kind of pinpointed where the injury was occurring, and we saw that it was actually golf that was causing my injury. I had been trying to do a certain, kind of a mechanical or feel kind of thing in my swing to produce a certain kind of shot, and it was great. It was working great. I played well in 18, and had one of my better years in a while. I'm not saying a whole lot, because I didn't have a stack of great years there from about 2011 on.
Sure.
But 18 was a good year. But as it turned out, the little move I was doing in my swing was causing some trouble in my lower back. And I had to get out of that. But what it did was it caused me to strengthen the area. And I continued in the gym. But with Cornell's oversight, I was able to pinpoint the areas to get stronger and add flexibility and just sort of retarget my fitness goals. And it turned out, I didn't know it at the time, but coming out of that injury as a little bit stronger, a little bit more informed player, that sort of set the table for me to be able to make these other changes a year or so later and not go right back on the bench with an injury.
And how about your mindset? I mean, has the mental side of your game, your approach changed?
It has a little bit. I've always worked really hard on the mental side of the game, partly out of necessity because I have to work really hard on the mental side of the game, but also because I look around. I've been playing golf a long time, and I used to look at and marvel at players like Curtis Strange and Paul Azinger and Tom Lehman, Lee Jansen. Those were my, you know, the guys that were my seniors when I came out on tour. And now that I'm the senior guy, I look and I marvel at guys like Colin Morikawa and Matt Wolf and the young kids that are just like, they're astonishingly good. And just like I used to, I look at those older guys back then and wonder what are they doing that I need to be doing more of? And now I just look the other direction and look at the younger kids and look at what are they doing that I need to do more of? So, my mindset has always required work, and everybody's does, but everybody can do the physical parts of the game pretty much equally. I mean, obviously some guys pound it off the tee, like Dustin Johnson and Bryson, you know, those guys are in another league. I'll never be able to do that. But for the most part, everybody on tour does all the parts of the game well, but you got to find something in between, like lurking in the shadows that can help you gain an edge. And for me, that edge has always been managing the course really well, managing myself really well mentally, and understanding where those emotions come from, you know, those little demons that we all have, the voices in your head, so to speak. I feel like I have like a full ensemble in there sometimes talking, but yeah, I mean, that's the mental side of the game. That's just, it requires work. And then, as far as like an approach, when Reagan started caddying for me, all that conflict and all the sort of disagreement and dissent with caddies of the past just melted away, and Reagan was on board for anything. And so we implemented a kind of a statistics-based approach that is more of a, it's not really a mental side of the game thing. It's more of an operational side of the game, and an approach that sort of dictates how much trouble you should take on with your shots based on how far you are from the hole and what your ball is sitting in, fairway versus rough. And we stick to it. We stick to the goal 100% of the time. And it has been great for making emotionless decisions on the course and not letting, you know, where we are in a tournament sort of get in the way. And it just leaves the executing up to me. And so I've been pretty good at executing lately, and that's the results have been great.
And so what do you think about now when you're staring down a short putt?
Well, you know, the putting is something that just comes and goes for everybody. Even the best putters, it's such a chancy, vague thing that, you know, to get a ball to go in the hole from 25 feet, it's just, there's a lot of variables. And so, I tend to take a lot of peace and rest in that fact alone that, hey, it's not always going to be there. So I think my expectations are in a good place in putting, that I'm not waking up scared that I might miss that first 2-footer, because I know I'm going to miss a 2-footer at some point in today or tomorrow or next week. It's going to happen. And I'm prepared for that, knowing that everybody goes through that stuff. So there was a time in my career when I did fear that, and I didn't feel comfortable on those, you know, certain short putts that just have a way of bothering everybody in golf. But now I feel very, very at ease with, you know, the makes and the misses, and I understand the percentages and all that. And just, I just try to just be the best I can, in the present and be peaceful. And I rely on my process, the things I can control, and let it happen. And if it you know, some weeks, like, down at Harbortown, I didn't have short misses really from anywhere inside maybe 5 feet. I don't remember. I may have missed one putt from inside 5 feet, and everything else was in the dead center. So, you know, some weeks it happens, and then other weeks you can't quite find it and get there. But my expectations are in a good place with all that.
It sounds like it. It's amazing. A couple more questions, Stuart Sink. When you were going through that winless drought, did you ever think that perhaps that 2009 Open Championship might just be your last hurrah? I mean, was there ever a time when you thought, gosh, I'm just never going to win again?
Well, the way you asked the question, I almost was able to say absolutely. But you changed one word, and you changed. I thought you were going to say, did you ever think that 2009 might be your last win? If you had asked me that, I would have said absolutely. Every day I thought, I wonder if that was my last win. But you said, did you ever think that was your last hurrah?
Uh-huh.
And so I would say that I never thought that was going to be my last hurrah, because I don't just get my hurrahs from winning golf tournaments. You know, I love playing and competing and learning about myself. And even the failures give you something to learn from. You know, the out of bounds on the 15th hole and on the last day when you're in contention, or the three putt, you know, on the 72nd hole. Those things even give you something to hurrah about if you look at it the right way. And so I try to get a hurrah out of every day. And so I can definitely not say absolutely to that question the way you phrased it. Almost, but not quite.
I love it. Great answer. Great answer. How about the Ryder Cup? I mean, with your stellar play this year, do you think you have a shot? And would that be a goal for you to make another Ryder Cup team?
Well, I think of goals as more like things I can do every day on the course and when I'm practicing to achieve goals that are not really results oriented. They're more like things I can control. Like, can I do my process as well? Can I be prepared and committed and decisive on every shot? Those are my goals. And believe me, I know that's like yawn material for media, but, and my wife would agree. She's like, oh, those aren't goals. But I'm like, yeah, those are goals. Those are kind of goals I like to set. I like to think of things like wins and Ryder Cup team membership, making the teams on stuff like that, Ryder Cup and President's Cup, as more rewards. And the rewards are a product of you achieving those little goals that may be, you know, yawn material. But for me, it's pretty exciting. So I do know that I got a text from Stricker after he won the Champions event last week, and then I won on the same day at Harbortown at RBC Heritage. And he said, hey, great win, man. Awesome to see you playing great, and we'd love to have you as part of the team. And then
wow.
I thought, shoot, I wonder if I'm close to qualifying for the Ryder Cup now with two wins this season. But then I looked and I'm like 26th in the standings. So I think I have to do a lot more work this year. I've won two times and I'm only 26. So that would indicate to me that I've got to win probably two more times to be in that team. And, you know, if I do that and get up there, then it would be just like an unbelievable experience. You know, I remember playing with Jay Haas when he was about 50, I think, on the Ryder Cup team. He qualified, and I thought that was really cool. And so if I could be, you know, part of that team, then that would just be really special.
Well, that was quite the encouraging text from the captain, Steve Stricker.
Yeah, I mean, we're friends, and he texts me when I play well, and we, you know, catch up. Nikki and Lisa are friends, but yeah, I mean, I was pretty excited by that, but then I was kind of dejected when I looked at the rankings and I was 26.
Well, there's still time, Stuart Sink. There's still time. So now, how would you want your career to be defined? How would you like your career to be defined when all is said and done? Not you know, you have plenty to go, obviously, but if you had to answer the question right now, what would it be?
I hate the phrase "nice guys finish last" because I like to really develop relationships and be a good guy and nice and a good listener to all my peers out there. I really enjoy that part. And I would like for them to erase that phrase from our vocabulary at the end of my career and say, you know what? Not all nice guys finish last. Because I don't think that's true. I think you can be arrogant on the inside, like I am. I'm arrogant and I'm confident, but you don't have to let that stuff show up in your relationships with other people or with the media. You don't have to be an a-hole, to be arrogant. I am very confident and very arrogant and believe 100% in what I'm doing. And I don't think that should stop me from being a nice guy and a good friend and somebody who, like, I care more about what they have to say than what I want to say. So I'd like to eradicate the phrase "nice guys finish last" from our vocabulary. That'd be a good way for me to go out.
And I can't let you go without asking how Lisa's doing. I know she is a stage 4 breast cancer survivor, and you took time off from golf to be at her side, and then she joined you on the road. And I recently watched that video that the PGA Tour put together with you both. I guess it came out a couple years ago, and it was just so touching. And I just definitely wanted to see how she's doing. It was great to see her last weekend enjoying all the festivities. Is she doing okay?
Yeah, she's doing okay. And I appreciate you asking about her. You know, every time I go and talk about myself and winning tournaments and all that, that's all fun. But I always remember that, Lisa's going through something that is not always trophies and plaid jackets. Her birthday is April 25th, and her diagnosis came in 2016 on, I believe it was April 28th. So she's coming up on her 5-year anniversary very soon of her diagnosis, which in, your cancer diagnosis journey, that's a pretty big deal. And she's in a really good remission. She's been in remission for 4.5 years now. So she's doing great. She's got some side effects. She still gets treatment every 3 weeks, being a stage 4 patient. But one of the things that we try to do and try to come to terms with as far as that part of our life is what's the message here? She's a good eater. She's been very disciplined in her life, even way before her diagnosis. But she's handled it just incredibly. And one of the things that we've come away with is that our relationship, in a lot of ways, not every way, but in a lot of ways, is just a sweeter, deeper type relationship than it used to be. And our faith is just incredibly sharp, and it wasn't so in the years before 2016 necessarily. And I think one of our biggest encouragements to people is that it doesn't take something like a cancer diagnosis or losing someone you're dear to, some tragedy in your life, to experience like a sharpening of your faith or a deepening of a relationship with someone who you love. That it's available to people now without that kind of a tragedy to shake your life up. And I just think that we wait until something bad happens, and it's not necessary. There's a lot of good things that come out of something like a cancer diagnosis. You just really have to search hard for what they are. But when you do find those, it makes them that much better.
Sure. I remember hearing her say, "I'm thankful for today. I'm thankful for now. I don't know what tomorrow will bring, but I do have today." And those are words of wisdom, if I've ever heard them, for everybody to live by. And Stuart, I just want to thank you so much for joining me. And may I say to you that nice guys finish first, and you're a true testament to that. So I so appreciate you coming on Talking Golf. Really, really a joy to talk with you.
Well, thank you. You got it. My pleasure.
All right. Stuart Sink, what a lovely guy. Really enjoyed talking to him. And wouldn't it be great if he did make another Ryder Cup? And he's already heard from his buddy Steve Stricker, who is the Ryder Cup U.S. team captain. So you never know. At 47, well, he'll be 48 by then. He turns 48 in a couple weeks. So what a great story that would be. We didn't have a chance to talk about the PGA Tour's Player Impact Program, but I'll just mention briefly how I feel about it. We can do a show on this in the future, but it was announced, last week, that the PGA Tour is going to award 10 players with the highest social media profile $40 million bonus plan. And it's going to be based on the top 10 players, the stars who move the needle the most in social media. And they'll receive these funds based on their impact score and, you know, Google searches, Q ratings, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's just crazy, right? I'm not a big fan of that, but we'll get into that more in a future show. No more time. We're running out of time. I want to thank Stuart Sink. My thanks to Wayne Buchan. My thanks to Ed Arzuman in the studio, to Billy Giacalone. Talking Golf with Ann LaGorry is brought to you by Travelers, proud sponsor of the Travelers Championship, June 24th to the 27th. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella. Have a great Sunday. Stay tuned for the Sports Edge with Rick Wolf, and I'll talk to you again next Sunday on Talking Golf with Ann LaGorry.